He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider for Clutch Points. And today on the show, we will be talking about Daniel Gafford. Literal minutes before we were getting ready to go live here, we got reports from ESPN, from Shams Charania, that Daniel Gafford was signing an extension with Dallas. Initially, he reported, no, we'll get to the details here in a second, but we're going to be talking about Daniel Gafford. Then I'm going to dive into the iTunes mailbag. Then I'm going to dive into the Twitter mailbag, where I asked you guys for names that you guys would like, covered or discussed or whatever, who you feel like weren't being discussed enough before. So we'll talk about all of that. Obviously, you guys who will be live in the comments, I'll get to some of your questions over the course of the show as well. And we'll have ourselves a nice dandy time. Quick reminder, please do hit that subscribe button if you guys are watching here live on YouTube. If you guys are watching on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge to find the show there. If you guys are listening to this in the morning via pod, make sure you're hitting that subscribe button wherever you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, because I am an company man. And look, if you're listening via podcast and you would like to check out the show in its video form, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge to find the show there. What a funny turn of events. We'll go ahead and dive on into how all of this plays out. They're played out, what it all means, and where everybody kind of goes from here right now. So, Shams Charania of ESPN tweets out the following. Dallas Mavericks center Daniel Gafford intends to sign a 3-year contract extension worth nearly $60 million, sources tell ESPN. Mavericks officials and Gafford's agents, Mike George and Shai Say of Clutch Sports, negotiated the new deal through 28-29 season. Nearly $60 million would have put his extension above the amount that he can make to be extended and still be traded right after he signs that extension. So that's why I tweeted out no earthly idea what Dallas is doing. I guess he can technically still be moved at the deadline, but this feels like turning down the opportunity to land an extra asset for a big they won't have minutes for and a few teams wanted. So I thought they were extending him with the intention to keep him. Then Mark Stein tweets out the following. Daniel Gafford's looming contract extension with the Mavericks is a 3-year deal worth $54 million, league sources say. It has been confirmed since by another, I think it was Grant Avseth in Dallas, who confirmed Mark Stein's number. That's a big, big difference. And I'm going to lean on my dude, Yossi's intel on the cap to explain why this is a big deal. He tweets out, this is the maximum amount Daniel Gafford can extend for within the extend and trade limits. He can get a 120% raise off his $14.4 million salary in 25-26, which starts him at $17.3 million in 26-27. Then with 5% raises, it tops out at $54.3 million. All right, cool. That makes a lot more sense. That means he is now still a target that the Lakers can acquire. I think the fact that Dallas is keeping him at that number, at least at for the time being, feels like a signal to everybody that, he's probably still on the trade block and very available. They still need backcourt help. Should also be noted that when the Lakers, or if any team trades for Gafford, the number that you need to get to for salary matching purposes is $14 million still, the amount that he's going to be making next year. But yeah, I think that that is all, it would all indicate to me that those talks between Dallas and other teams, the Lakers being one of them, I'm told, all of this indicates to me that I think Gafford still gets moved this summer. They have Anthony Davis, who is probably best at the center spot. They have Derek Lively, who is their future in terms of their starting center. And they have Daniel Gafford, who is now extended for the foreseeable future, or for the next 3 years. Outside of that, they just had their other big picked up his player option. So he is still on the roster as well. Somebody in the chat helped me out, which Dwight that is. So you have four centers potentially. Powell, thank you, Sri. The Mavericks still have four centers potentially on their books heading into next season. And by the way, Cooper Flagg, who is definitely more of a power forward, but I think eventually down the line could potentially spend a little bit of time at center, and in small ball lineups, they might give him a go there too. So, they have an extremely crowded front court. You have PJ Washington still there too, who plays basically the same position as Cooper Flagg. It's just kind of a mess up front for Dallas, and they need to alleviate some of that pressure. And the fact that they kept Gafford's number at a place where they can still move him this summer indicates to me that they also acknowledge the facts there and will likely look to move him or one of their other centers. But you look at their other centers or bigs who you could be looking to move. All right, PJ Washington, he could probably be moved because he plays the exact same position as Cooper Flagg. So he's certainly a movable target. Outside of him, though, nobody's going to want Dwight Powell, and you're not going to trade Anthony Davis, or they have indicated that they aren't going to trade Anthony Davis. You aren't going to trade Derek Lively, seeing as he matches up perfectly with the Cooper Flagg era moving forward. So that leaves Gafford as the other guy who could potentially be moved here. And that's why I would say this remains very interesting to those of us who have been keeping tabs on the Lakers' pursuit of a center. I don't want to get too far into the weeds here or anything like that. I think Yossi did a great job of breaking it down. I'm not going to go any further there. But as far as the reporting goes, I've been thinking about this a lot. I'm just going to hit a quick side note. We'll come back to this here in a bit. I've been thinking about this basically since Adrian Wojnarowski retired, and how information in the NBA sphere has kind of sort of been monopolized by Shams. ESPN's got to love that, because they are now seen as the home for all NBA information. But in a situation like this, where Shams misses on, or potentially misses, I should say, on a key detail that completely changes the outlook of this story, that's why it's so important that information isn't monopolized. We saw this earlier today, where he tweets out that the Indiana Pacers ran further tests, something or other. Sources, Tyrese Halliburton blew his Achilles tendon. We knew that yesterday, and we knew that not just from seeing it on camera, but also his dad told, I believe it was Lisa Salters who was working that game last night. He told Lisa Salters that Halliburton had indeed blown his Achilles. We were good there. And it was so funny how like people treated it as if it was this new information. And when I pointed out, we knew this already, people immediately caped up and said like, no, this is why Shams has this right. It's like, no guys, like, did we not learn anything from the JJ Redick situation? Because I found myself in the middle of a situation where Woj was telling one story, Shams is telling another story. Those two stories are in direct conflict with each other. And we're acting as if those are the two only purveyors of truth and everybody else be damned. I remember breaking the JJ Redick story here on the show. And people were like, no, you got it too early. Huh? And here we are again, even further going like further in that direction. where like Shams is apparently now the only purveyor of truth, and he got this apparently wrong. Now, maybe he got it right, and maybe his information is good. I personally trust Mark Stein for a variety of reasons. One, he's the best reporter on any team specifically out there, period. He is the most plugged in with the Mavs of anybody covering any team, in my opinion. Also, he's a super duper nice guy. Also, he went to Cal State Fullerton, my alma mater, and I'm a little biased in that regard. But in this on this front, Stein reported the number, Avseth confirmed the number, and now we arrive at a place here where a version of the story, if you were just only going by Shams's information, you would have the story wrong, and Gafford can actually be traded. So let's back off on Shams being the only person who gets to control what reality is or is not. All right. Let's really quickly before we move into the mailbag and the list of Twitter names here and stuff like that, I want to talk about Gafford specifically, seeing as he is, now in the news and still attainable. So the knock on Gafford is that he's not the best rebounder, which is not the best defensive rebounder. His positioning defensively isn't the best. He's not the most mobile center. The people that you kind of ask about him too. In Dallas will kind of tell you that like, yeah, he's a pretty good center. He's probably not the starting center on a really, really good team though. And, I would probably agree. That said, Gafford at $18 million moving forward, or, whatever his number will finally be, Gafford at that number with that cost controlled, as we know, the cap is going to go up 10% every year. That is a number where he can start if he is going to on your team. But then also if you acquire a better big, having him as like a really, really good sub or a really good backup center also doesn't hurt you cap wise too much. And because of all of that, because of the timing here, the number that he's at, the fact that he's probably still very much available, and the skill set, right? I was actually super impressed. I got to see him live there when I went and covered Luka's game back in Dallas, first game back in Dallas. I was super impressed by Gafford. Takes up a ton of space, quick, gets off the ground quickly and finishes very quickly above the rim. Can get way above the rim, which is something that the Lakers are really going to want with Luka. I really like Gafford, and I liked him before this. Now with him at this number, cost control for the next 3 years, I really, really like him. It's going to be really interesting to see how the Lakers feel about him, though, because they have been very reluctant to take on long-term money. But this is somebody Luka already played with. This is probably somebody Luka would specifically request to continue to play with if he is on the trade market, or as Gafford probably is on the trade market. So this is somebody who I would definitely tell you to jot down in ink as somebody the Lakers are going to continue to try to go out and acquire over the course of the summer until they either do acquire him or acquire somebody else. This is the Gafford rumors aren't going anywhere. All right, let's go ahead and dive on into the iTunes reviews. Ashley Bennett 213 asks or writes, always entertaining, especially shows with Harrison. Thank you very much. One question, what buy low candidates do you think are solid targets? Collins, Laravia, in the aim of winning on the margins. Laravia got a lot of pub recently. I saw he did the Lakers Nation pod even. So Laravia shares an agent with Austin Reeves, and Austin Reeves's agent has a very good, it's just a really good dude. I've talked about him in the past, and he has a really good relationship with a lot of us who cover the team, and a very productive one. There was that moment where Laravia was, I think, doing Trevor Lane's other show outside of Lakers Nation, and panned the phone over, and there was Austin driving him around wherever he was driving him around. They're very close because they share that agency, and yeah, I would imagine Laravia is a name to keep an eye on here for the Lakers. I like him a lot. I'm a little nervous about the foot speed issue there with him, but he has a nice, quick, high release from three-point range, played really well for the Sacramento Kings last year, became super popular in Sacramento, actually. So we'll see if they even let him get away. But Laravia is certainly a free agent candidate. I don't think he'll necessarily be available. He'll probably be available for the minimum. Maybe. Although if he goes for the minimum, I just think Sacramento would keep him. So I we'll see with Laravia. I like him as a potential candidate. He does help with shooting, though he doesn't help really with the athleticism in the way that the Lakers need that help there. So he's certainly an interesting one. And then Collins, we've talked about him plenty. I reported that the Lakers and Utah have been talking about John Collins. I really like the idea of Collins. He's a more practical fit, I believe, with Luka than Rui is. Rui is I think a better ISO scorer. He has quicker feet, so he's a better perimeter defender. So the Lakers would certainly miss that a little bit, but Collins can get way above the rim, which I really like. He has a good quick release from, I think his release is a little bit quicker than Rui from 3-point range. So I like that quite a bit. And he's a bigger guy, so he rebounds quite a bit better and more consistently than Rui does, which I really, really like. So whether the Lakers would be able to find a deal with Utah on two players who are as similar as they are, and then with all the other complications that we've talked about with the future draft capital that Utah owns of the Lakers, you know, that certainly complicates things as well. But I've talked about Collins for a little bit and for a decent reason, and it's because I knew that we would probably arrive at a place where the Lakers and Utah would be having nice lengthy conversations about what it would take to get him out of Utah. They have been, he's had fans in the Lakers organization for a little while now. All right. Let's just really quickly make sure I don't have any super comments. I do not. So that means I'm going to dive on into the Twitter mailbag. All right. So what I did here, here's what I tweeted. Didn't do a mailbag yesterday, so we'll go ahead and do one today. For this one, let's change it up. Give me a player you feel hasn't been talked about enough, and I'll give you my thoughts on him and his potential fit with the Lakers. Ready, go. And you guys went. First name off of the bat from my dude, Rich Homie Flom, Robert Flom, my favorite at in all of Twitter. Alex Len and Jackson Hayes, you're a terrorist. That is not nice. Next one here from Mr. Come on, Giannis. I'm sure the Lakers are interested. I am also interested, but I don't think Milwaukee is all that interested in trading him. Next one here, at Lakers better, Exum. All right, that's a fun one. We had Dan Wojcicki on the show a little bit ago, and he threw Exum's name out there. I don't know if at the time that was a, you know, him reporting or anything like that. I think he was more just kind of throwing it out there, connecting dots. Also, again, I think I said it to him yesterday, but again, Dan, congrats on the Athletic gig. But yeah, with Exum, just a refresher, Rob Pelinka was previously his agent. So you have that built-in relationship with him. He's a bigger guard who is a streaky shooter. He moves his feet well defensively, but for whatever reason, he keeps on getting hurt. And it isn't really necessarily like the repeatable type of injuries that really make me nervous. It's a bunch of freak accidents. And you know, he's like broken his hand here and there. I'm not that worried about. I think he tore his ACL at one point, which certainly gives you pause with him and his athleticism, but he was able to get a lot of that athleticism back. He is a very solid perimeter defender. I like that he is a little bigger, a little longer, which is something the Lakers, you know, we have the 6'5 and under rule heading into next season. So Exum is a really good name to bring up. He is somebody that the Lakers are going to be interested in, I am told. And especially if they could get him at the minimum, that is somebody who they would happily sign. Now, if he signs at the minimum, I don't see Dallas letting him walk, seeing as they are so thin at point guard already. But if they do, you know, if they consider that they have they're kind of priced out or whatever, then Exum would be an excellent find. Hold on one second. All right. Nimish Toti, I think. I don't know what Miami is trying to do with the crappy roster, but Bam Adebayo is about to get really expensive, and he's proven to be, at most, the second best player on a championship team, probably third with his offensive limitations. Any chance the Lakers could swoop in on him? I also saw some comments from the live chat here about Adebayo. I had some other people mention on my way into the lounge here today that apparently the Lakers are the betting favorite to land Adebayo. A quick note on the betting favorites thing. There is zero correlation between betting odds and which teams have historically landed that player. It just hasn't happened. It hasn't worked out that way. I hate to burst a lot of people's bubble, and I probably just ended my relationship with those email subscriptions who send out those betting odd numbers. But yeah, there is no correlation whatsoever there. So when you see Dunk Central or whatever tweeting out eyeball emojis, the Lakers, they're the odds favorite to get so-and-so. The reason that those odds generate the engagement they do is because those bookies know exactly what they're doing. If you put the Lakers at the top of a list for any player here, it is going to generate a whole bunch of engagement. And it works out great for the books who get their name out there in tweets. It works out great for the aggregator accounts that get the engagement from Lakers fans who take that really seriously. The only people it doesn't work out for, well, I guess two factions of people. One, anybody who takes it seriously enough to use that as a predictor for who their team might get, never works out that way. And two, if you're betting on those things, just Venmo me, please. Please. If you're just giving money away, because those odds aren't based on anything. It's not based on intel. It's not based on, like, it's not like those bookies are going to Shams and is like, hey, if you had to guess, it's not working out that way. It doesn't necessarily work out that way. So, yeah, I would tell all of everyone to hit pause when you start talking about betting odds on the futures of some of these players. Now, as far as Adebayo and the price and whether the Lakers could get involved. So one of the things I heard, and I heard this secondhand, so, you know, take that for what you will, but essentially it really sounds like, and I think I saw some reporters go publicly with this too, but it really sounds like there are two factions within the Miami Heat organization that are at odds with each other. There is Pat Riley, who would very much like to continue to push all his chips into the middle of the table and keep as competitive a team as he possibly can. And then there is the faction of the organization that kind of has their eyes forward and doesn't want to trade Nikola Jovic for Kevin Durant, right? And what that has led to is an organization in the Miami Heat that is just kind of stuck in the middle. It's the worst version of the two timelines problem that ended the Warriors dynasty and that the Lakers have been kind of stuck in to one extent or another. Here in what we're watching with Miami is a whole bunch of people rowing in opposite directions. And what it's led to is an organization that, you know, just had to trade away Jimmy Butler for pennies and didn't even get enough in return for Jimmy Butler to make a more reasonable offer for Kevin Durant. And it's just kind of a mess there in Miami. Now, if the Lakers call up Pat Riley and they say, hey, what would it take for us to get Bam Adebayo? He would probably tell the Lakers everything. If the Lakers contact the other faction of the Heat organization, which, by the way, they don't have the built-in relationship that they do with, say, Pat Riley, maybe that faction of the organization would be more interested in moving Bam Adebayo. But at the end of the day, you still have to get Pat Riley's final say. And I just don't see the Heat moving Adebayo for what the Lakers could potentially offer him. For one problem, the Lakers' best asset in those kinds of conversations would be Austin Reeves. And if you send Austin Reeves to a team with Tyler Hero already, then who just got extended, by the way, what does that team look like? What does that accomplish for them? So you're probably looking to involve a third team to send Austin Reeves to that would maybe send Miami something that they would actually want. But as they just extended Tyler Hero to probably remain competitive, is Miami going to get a combination of players for Bam Adebayo that is better than Bam Adebayo right now? And yeah, I agree. He has his limitations as a player. He tends to short circuit and doesn't show all that much interest in shooting. He's kind of that tweener player offensively where he doesn't really space the floor, but he's also not big enough to dominate in the way that some of these more traditionally sized centers have tended to dominate in recent years. He is, however, for my money, like it's between him and Anthony Davis for the two best defensive centers in the sport. And in that regard, you could really do worse for a Jokic team than Bam Adebayo, what he would do for your defense. Problem is, though, like Bam doesn't really get above the rim as high as he would need to. And when he does, you need like the whole runway to get up that high. And I just the fit with not Jokic, Luka, with Luka is a little clunky offensively. It's great defensively, but it's a little clunky offensively. And if you're going to give up everything that you have to give up to get Bam Adebayo, not even talking necessarily about assets, but we're talking financially here too. If you're going to give up everything that it's going to take, all of the rotation players that it would take to trade for a Bam Adebayo, who, as this poster mentions, is about to get paid, that better be a pretty damn near perfect fit. And it just isn't as perfect a fit as I would like it to be. So I like Bam Adebayo, the player. I think, you know, if the Lakers didn't have Luka and the focus wasn't to maximize Luka's offensive talents, I would say, yeah, go out and do it. But Bam makes just enough money to where I'm not as interested as maybe others might be. The quick side note, which is still related to the stuff that we just talked about here. If you're going to trade for a Bam Adebayo, Nick Claxton to a lesser extent, you know, you can only trade the 2031 first once. You can only trade Rui Hachimura once. You can. It's kind of like the D'Angelo Russell thing last year, where would the Lakers have been better off trading D'Angelo Russell for a center than they were for Dorian Finney-Smith? given, you know, we didn't know that eventually they would make the Luka Doncic trade, but you could only move D'Lo once. And after you made the Luka trade, would the Lakers have been better off with Gafford instead of Dorian Finney-Smith last year, or Claxton instead of Dorian Finney-Smith last year? There are reasonable arguments on both sides of the argument there. My point is, though, that like the Lakers have so few movable assets right now that whenever they move them, or if they move them, you absolutely have to nail the return on those few movable assets. And given how much stuff you have to move for Bam Adebayo, that margin for error is yay big, maybe even smaller. And I don't know. I would rather make a lower risk move than one for Bam, given that it's not an absolutely OJ's glove perfect fit.